Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. As we continue our special series called The Neonicotinoid View, my special guest co-host Tom Theobald and I will be joined by commercial beekeeper Jeff Anderson. Jeff is the owner of California Minnesota Honey Farms, a commercial migratory beekeeping operation, and also represents the beekeeping industry on the National Beekeeping Advisory Board and the National Pollinator Defense Fund. Today, we're going to discuss the new EPA labeling initiative. So I would first like to welcome to the show my special guest co-host, Mr. Tom Theobald.
Hello.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Hello, June.
And our guest today, Mr. Jeff Anderson. Good afternoon, Jeff, and welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Jeff, can you share with our audience a little bit about your operation as well as the losses that you've sustained?
Yeah, I run a commercial migratory beekeeping operation, California Minnesota Honey Farms, and we're a small to modest-sized bee operation. We operate in California for pollination services. We pollinate largest crop in the world, almonds, followed by cherries and or apples and blueberries. And during the summer months, we bring our bees back to the Midwest for summer forage and honey production in Minnesota.
Thank you. Has the EPA cooperated with you as well as the other commercial beekeepers to find out what your needs are?
EPA has given some attention to the issue of pollinator mortality. As to actions they've taken relative to that, that's a whole different issue. But they have visited with us and are apprised of the issues.
We're here today to talk about the label changes that have been proposed by the EPA, and they're saying that these will help to protect the pollinators. And those of us in the beekeeping industry have some serious concerns about what these label changes represent or don't represent, and it's important for the listeners to understand some of the basics of this issue. And one of the major considerations is that in labeling, there are two types of language. There's mandatory language, imperative language, that you shall do something. It establishes limits which are supportable by law. The other language is advisory language, and that's more or less a commentary on a situation or suggestions. And as beekeepers, we're very concerned about the language that has been used and the implications of these changes. So with that introduction, I would like to ask our guest, Jeff, to expand a little bit upon that subject. Jeff?
Yeah, we're talking today about this new proposed, well, it's not proposed, EPA has put it out there. It's a new bee hazard statement that will be used on four specific active ingredient pesticides. So I don't know how many trade name products that will actually include, but we're talking about four neonic pesticides and ones that are designed to be used in a spray formulation, actually applied forwardly on the plant. Going back to what you said about the mandatory and advisory language issues, EPA actually put out a PR document or PR notice about mandatory and advisory language some years ago. And there is both mandatory and advisory language on almost every label, and it's appropriate because the mandatory says do not apply under these specific conditions. And of course, the advisory language gives the reasons for that, you know, the leading up to that prohibition or some of the conditions that would require to make a safe application. Where we run into problems is, amphipra is pretty clear about this, you can have both on the label, but one cannot circumvent the other. The advisory language has to be consistent with the prohibition, the mandatory label.
Let's just take a little closer look at that. In my view, in my reading of what they have released and the changes that they're going to make, most of the language is advisory, and it concerns me as a beekeeper, because even in situations where there's clear mandatory language that may be associated with large fines for violations, they're routinely disregarded and ignored if they're read at all, and if there are violations, they're not enforced. Most of the language in these proposed changes is advisory, but there is some imperative language. There is some prohibition, and I'd like to take a little closer look at the imperative language and what the EPA has done with that. Could you expand on that a little bit, Jeff?
Well, I think what I'll do is actually just read it. It's the mandatory statement on all these products, these four neonic products, is do not apply this product while bees are foraging. Do not apply this product until flowering is complete and all petals have fallen unless the following conditions have been met. So the imperative is to not apply it while bees are actually foraging on the crop and until the bloom is complete. That's pretty straightforward. And the problem with this new label language, the way I understand, or the, my reading of it is that the advisory language kind of countermands the mandatory, because the do not apply is actually a pretty good label in my opinion.
The next question that I have is for Tom. Tom, who is responsible for ensuring that the pesticides are properly administered by applicators?
That responsibility is delegated in most situations to what are called the primacy partners, and that would be most typically state departments of agriculture. They have the responsibility to see that the law is carried out. I wanted to make a few additional comments on what Jeff had just said, and while there is imperative language, what they have done is they have neutered that imperative language with all sorts of conditions and exceptions, which, if met, relieve you of the responsibility of following the law. For example, if you spray after sunset, or if it's below 55 degrees, or if it's in accordance with some public health situation. There are multiple exceptions, and in effect, there is no mandatory language because it's been neutered. Now, the concern that we have is that the EPA has invested great energy in providing for avoidance of the law when their responsibility is to see that the law is honored and upheld.
Now, let's take a look at the section that reads, when using this product, take steps two, and go down to section 2 and 3, minimize drift of this product onto beehives or to off-site pollinator-attracted habitat, and 3, drift of this product onto beehives or off-site to pollinator-attractive habitat can result in bee kills. Does this directive suggest that the applicator control the wind?
Well, maybe Jeff can speak to that, because he had a situation just recently where he had to move his bees out of harm's way because there was spraying that was going to be undertaken, which technically, whether Jeff's bees are present or not, was an illegal use of that pesticide. No provisions were made to protect the other pollinators.
Well, back to your comment about wind, June, yes. I don't know that it's so much a prohibition. I mean, asking the applicator to control the wind, but if a product is drifting, obviously wind direction, yeah, plays into that, and applicators can choose days when the wind is down or it's blowing in a direction away from specific sensitive sites. But having said that, Tom's point is well taken, because at issue here is that the bee hazard statement is to protect pollinating insects, and EPA is clear about that in their press release. And they keep using the terms in here, insect pollinators, in their document. Moving managed honeybees still doesn't really absolve an applicator from following the label, which is to protect pollinators. So many of the advisory things that they say, or most of the advisory things they say, and maybe I should even go as far as to say all of them, directly contradict the mandatory language in the label.
One of the things that I want to point out is in regards to the language that EPA used, it clearly states this product can kill bees and other insect pollinators. What about other pollinators that are not insects?
Well, yes, I'm sure we're going to miss some of the pollinators that aren't insects, but we have to draw a line somewhere, obviously. And the intent of the bee hazard statement on the label, obviously, is to protect just the insect pollinators. EPA has the latitude to put other prohibitions on the label. I mean, they do have in the environmental hazard sections, often there's a section for aquatics, and they have a keep out of reach of children section on the label, et cetera, et cetera. So, to protect.
Jeff?
Well, it's just that, it's just that the EPA, apparently, that the whole concept of this initiative is for the EPA to work with pesticide manufacturers to change labels so that they will meet the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act safety standard, the FIFRA. And that includes more than just the bees and insect pollinators. That's why I bring that up.
Yeah.
Jeff, I'd like to take a look at a couple of the finer points. The first is these label changes are directed almost exclusively at foliar applications with a ground rig or with an airplane, and to avoid the blooming period. But isn't it true that these chemicals become systemic to the plant and persist for years? That's my first question. And the second question is, it appears that they have completely avoided the major delivery system of these chemicals in question, which is seed treatment. The seeds are treated and it becomes incorporated in the plant as it grows. That has been completely ignored. Can you comment on those two aspects?
Well, yeah, I think they're kind of pretty closely tied together, because you're correct. These products are systemic. They actually are absorbed into the plant and come up in the plant vascular system. Or maybe I should rephrase that, because you mentioned seed treatment, and obviously the intent here is to only deal with foliar spray type application. So the plant can deliver the systemic insecticide coming up off of the seed, because the plant can absorb the pesticide and bring it up through the plant vascular system. So that is one level of concern. But the other way is they use these same pesticides as spray applications, and in spray application, the plant actually absorbs the pesticide through the pores of the plant on the foliage, and the plant absorbs it into the vascular system. It then becomes part of the plant, and the plant systemically re-expresses this material out, and that's how it kills the sucking and chewing insects that they're trying to control. The problem we run into is that you can't really mitigate a systemic pesticide using a label prohibition, or a label like they're doing here, limiting the time away from bloom, because part of the, if I go back to the mandatory statement there, it's that one of the things it says is, one of the things it says on the mandatory portion of the label is, do not apply this product until flowering is complete and all petals have fallen. So for that would seem to make sense, except that we know that some of the perennial plants in particular, plants like or crops like apples, you can apply a foliar application of a neonic, and it will express at toxic levels in subsequent seasons. And so that makes applying post-bloom, all it does is defer the toxic event until a later time.
Thank you, Jeff. My view is a little harsh, I guess. I think that this is the work of the great magician. This is sleight of hand and smoke of mirrors to give the illusion that they are protecting pollinators when, in fact, they're doing little or nothing. Do you disagree with that?
Tom, yes, I more or less agree with that, because the problem with this particular mitigation measure is that they're trying to apply it to a pesticide for which it'll never work. Pesticides that have these extremely long residuals in the plant tissue cannot really be mitigated through a label prohibition.
Do you think there is some mitigation possible, or are we just in a situation where it's lose-lose?
I don't think there's actually a mitigation measure that is possible for crops or plants that bloom, because pollinators will be present, and the nature of this particular group of pesticides is that they become systemic in the plant, and then the plant expresses them for the rest of the plant's life cycle.
The science has also shown in greater and greater degree that these chemicals are water-soluble and migrate with the groundwater and can be drawn up by non-target plants at toxic levels. Do you see anywhere in these label changes that issue is addressed?
No. No, I don't see it addressed at all with this labeling.
Do you see anywhere in this labeling where there's protection offered for the native pollinators or the amphibians or the freshwater invertebrates?
Well, native pollinators, yeah, but the problem is that if you go to their advisory language and follow the label according to the advisory language, where you move managed honeybees out of the area, then it completely throws out the protection for native pollinators. If you stuck specifically to the prohibition while bees are foraging and until the flowering is complete and the petals have fallen, natives will be somewhat protected.
The other evening you had to move a yard of bees to stay out of the way of spraying on soybeans. And there's been great concern in the beekeeping community about the efforts of the EPA and the state primacy partners to shift the burden of responsibility onto the backs of the beekeepers. In other words, you have to get out of harm's way. Can you comment on that a little bit? Because this is not supported anywhere in the law, and beekeepers are very concerned about this effort.
Well, moving managed bee colonies actually puts the beekeeper in an uncomfortable position, because if I move bee colonies, then I'm like giving permission, if you would, to the spray applicator to kill the natives, and I don't want to be in that position. That's not my. But then the flip side of that, of course, is if I don't move bees, likely I'm going to take a significant kill, depending on the type of pesticide they're applying.
But wouldn't that be a violation of the law? And have you seen any enforcement on the part of the EPA or the state primacy partners to see that the law is honored?
Not at all. And the pressure from the primacy partners in particular, and EPA to a fair extent, is to actually push it onto the beekeeper. And that's exactly what this label does. I don't think you talked about it much here, but one of the conditions that can be met for application is, and I'll just read it here. So if an application must be made when managed bees are in the treatment site, the beekeeper providing, in this case, pollination service, must be notified no less than 48 hours prior to the time of the planned application so the bees can be removed, covered, or otherwise protected prior to spraying. Well, if I remove the bees, cover them, or protect them in some way to protect my managed bees from spraying, it goes back to what I just said a minute ago, and that is, in essence, I'm giving the applicator permission to kill everything else.
Yes.
The bottom line is that the question that I had before in regards to the fact that they're addressing the bees and the insect pollinators, it's something that really needed to be acknowledged, because the bottom line is that you need the birds, you need the other pollinators in the ecosystem.
We are significantly concerned that this new labeling for the four systemic neonics completely misses the point that this type of mitigation measure will not work for fully applied systemic pesticides. The point, June, is that if we could get the apply this product while bees are foraging, do not apply this product, you know, flowering is complete and all petals have fallen, with a period behind that, we just solved the pollinator crisis.
I don't understand how you think it solves the problem.
Because it gives a legal prohibition with no advisory language to countermand it.
It doesn't matter for the systemics. It doesn't matter if they avoid bloom. It doesn't matter. As you said earlier, it just postpones the damage.
It really doesn't matter, because CRIFRA gives them an out. The language on this new proposed label could be useful for non-systemic, already applied pesticides. It completely misses the mark with the systemic pesticides, particularly the real persistent neonics that it's intended to be used on.
Thank you, Jeff. And folks, thank you for tuning in. This has been June Sawyer with the Organic Bee Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.